Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Laetrile when we come back. You know, when you're making $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Then you're required to pay a 17% income tax on that same $50,000. Now that's another $8,500. You just paid an extra $1,300 by paying your tax on a tax, which makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It is not the 15.3% that's being advertised. Now, isn't that just real special? And if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Call me and ask for my free general law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. And our tax and status school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Laetrile. Laetrile is a natural vitamin. It was discovered by a Dr. Krebs, a medical doctor, in San Francisco, California in 1950. And it was adopted by a number of doctors, not a great number, not hundreds or thousands, but by maybe 100 doctors here in the United States over the 1960s and 70s as a treatment for cancer. And it worked phenomenally well. It worked so well that it was banned. That's right. It worked so well it was banned. It's only one, though, of 14 cures for cancer. That's why I mentioned to you that when they're having a march on cancer or they want you to run for cancer, I don't march and I don't run. I figured that if you're not using the 14 cures that you've got, if you were to discover a 15th cure, of what value is it? Now, there are some conventional modalities that are covered here called The Hoax of the Proven Cancer Cure. It's chapter 3 in the book that we're covering, Laetrile Case Histories. Dr. Richardson wrote a book. Now, this isn't the only doctor that's written a book. If you go to the search engines and you punch in Laetrile, you're going to get a ton of information. It's used in Mexico. It's used in Indonesia, Israel. It's used around the world. But it's not common anywhere in the world. It's not common. And that's because there's a big business in cancer therapy. Cancer therapy is where we treat the disease, but we don't cure it. And that's where the money's at. The money is in the treatment. It's not in the cure. For instance, let's suppose that the medical industry could come up with a disease cure, a cancer disease cure, that would cost them $1 to produce, and they could sell it to you for $100 a pill. Would we want to use it? The answer is no. No. And the reason for that is that at $1 a pill, and there's 300 million Americans, you could only make $300 million. You see, the cancer industry in America already produces $500 billion a year. Now, why would we want to trade $500 billion a year for $300 million? So it's pretty obvious that cancer is a very valuable business. It's like having a product line. It's like being a furniture store and you have a very valuable Berkeley or Berkey recliner and you're selling one of these recliner chairs one a day, six a week, in your store, and it only takes up 3 square feet, you know, or 3 by 3, about 9 square feet. That's a very valuable product line. Why would you want to do away with that and put in doilies or put in something else, lamps? No, we want to sell what makes money. And that's the bottom line here. And the people that are selling cut, burn, and poison. Now, cut means to surgically remove the cancer tumor. And then burn means to irradiate it. We're going to use radiation and we're going to burn it out. And then poison refers to chemotherapy. That's where we're going to use some form of drug over here in order to kill the tumor. And then your body is supposed to dispose of it. And this is what kills so many people in the conventional cancer cure. The radiation will kill the tumor and so will the chemotherapy, but then your body has to dispose of it. And if the thing is too big, it plugs up your lymph system, plugs up your liver, and you die from the complications of killing the tumor. It isn't the tumor that kills you. It isn't the cure that kills you. It's the detoxification that kills you. That's why they tell you, you've got to catch this cancer early. And that's exactly correct. Now, with Laetrile, you don't have to catch the cancer early because it doesn't kill the whole cancer in one fell swoop. It kills it over a long period of time so that your body has an opportunity to dispose of the dead cells. Whereas if you kill it rapidly, that is, you kill it in a day or two or three or five, well, then your body has to dispose of that mass through your body organs, and it can't do that, and so they plug up and you die from some other disease. Now, the hoax of the proven cancer cure, a second look at orthodox therapy. On July 21st, 1967, the trial of Dr. Maurice Cowan was coming to a close. His crime was the use of Laetrile in the control of cancer. In a crowded courtroom in Los Angeles, prosecuting attorney Ira Reiner solemnly faced the jury and said, "This is not a kindly old man. This is the most thoroughly evil person the imagination can concoct. He's taking advantage of people for money. And we can understand people who kill in rage. What do you think of a man who can kill at $9 per visit? This man has to be stopped. He's very dangerous. This case goes far beyond the walls of this courtroom. The way to stop him is a guilty verdict." Now, the jury had never been allowed to see any evidence that Laetrile actually worked. They believed every word the prosecutor said, and 3 days later, they pronounced Dr. Cowan guilty. He was fined $4,400, and at age 70, he was sentenced to 2 months in prison. Dr. Cowan was not the first Laetrile proponent to feel the wrath of organized medicine. In 1956, Dr. Arthur T. Harris. In April of 1973, Dr. Byron Krebs. In November of 1975, Dr. Stuart M. Jones. On December 16, 1975, Dr. James Previtra. On March 22, 1976, Dr. Seymour Wiseman. Dr. John Richardson, the author of this book of Albany, California, has faced perhaps more legal harassment from the state than any other physician. He's had his license suspended. He's been arrested, hauled off to jail twice, and 4 times he's been made to stand trial for using Laetrile. Now, he spent more than 6 months defending himself in court, and in the fourth trial, they succeeded in securing a conviction against him, but he has appealed his case, and the battle continues. Regardless of the outcome, the bureaucracy has unlimited resources, and they will not let up in their effort to stop him legally, exhaust him financially, or destroy him professionally through adverse publicity. Now, to the average observer, this record of harassment by the FDA may sound incomprehensible. Thousands of voices have been raised in protest, but the federal and state agencies merely reply that they are protecting the consumer from quackery. The laws and administrative rulings prohibiting the use of Laetrile are justified to the public and to the juries on the basis of 2 assumptions. The first assumption is that Laetrile is completely worthless, or at best it is unproven, and the case histories that constitute the main portion of this book show dramatically that such an assumption is incorrect. The other assumption, however, is even more important because it is the backbone of the argument in favor of such laws. It is the argument that orthodox therapies, that is, surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy, are proven cures which offer the patient an excellent chance of recovery if only started in time. If this assumption is correct, as we are told it is repeatedly by a spokesman for those therapies, then the gullible public must be prevented from seeking Laetrile, not so much because it is worthless or unproven, but because it prevents the patient from obtaining the truly effective and proven cures of orthodox medicine. So what they're saying, in effect, is this. Cut, burn, and poison is proven effective. But we have to catch you early. And if we don't catch you early, then you waste a lot of your time taking this Laetrile or something else. Then you've lost that valuable window of opportunity. So that when the Laetrile finally fails and it doesn't cure your cancer, then when you come to the doctor, your tumor is too big, it's too late, and you're going to die. Now, that's the basic theory behind that. At least this is the theme of the American Cancer Society's book, Unproven Methods of Cancer Management, where it says, unfortunately, many patients with curable cancer leave the care of competent physicians to be treated with a worthless, unproven remedy until a cure by accepted methods of treatment becomes impossible. Well, Section 10400.1 of the California Health and Safety Code has embodied this sentiment into law. And an American Cancer Society brochure asks the question, why not use an unproven method if it has been proven to be harmless? Then it answers the question by saying, well, because time is cancer's ally. And any time wasted on worthless, unproven remedies may prevent a patient from obtaining proven treatment while his cancer is still curable. Well, in response to this statement, I sent a letter to the American Cancer Society headquarters expressing surprise at the assertion that there was any cancer therapy successful enough to warrant being called a proven cure. This is their reply. They said, thank you for your note. There are proven cures if detected in time. Surgery and or radiation and more chemotherapy is playing a part. This, then, clearly is the position of orthodox medicine. The purpose of this chapter is to take a second look at these so-called proven cures and to demonstrate that the scientific record does not support that claim. Surgery has been the primary treatment for cancer at least from the time of the Egyptians. Celsus, in the first century, left excellent descriptions of surgery for cancer of the lip. Leonides, in the second century, and Guy de Chalic, in the 14th century, described a wide variety of operations for cancer. Hildenus described the first auxiliary dissection for breast cancer in the 16th century. The first radical operation for breast cancer was described by Halsted in 1891, and it's Halsted's basic procedures that are still followed today for radical mastectomy. In many cases, cancer surgery can be a life-saving stopgap measure, particularly where intestinal blockages and adhesions must be relieved to prevent death from secondary complications. Surgery also has the psychological advantage of visibly removing the tumor, and from that point of view, it offers the patient and his family some temporary comfort and hope. The degree to which surgery is useful, however, is the same degree to which the tumor is not malignant. The greater the proportion of cancer cells in that tumor, the less likely it is that surgery is going to help. Generally, the most highly malignant tumors of all are considered inoperable. One of the primary problems with surgery is the fact that any cutting into the tumor, even for a biopsy, usually results in spreading the cancer to other parts of your body. This is a grim fact that most physicians fail to tell their patients when they recommend a biopsy. According to Clinical Oncology for Medical Students and Physicians, published jointly by the University of Rochester School of Medicine and the American Cancer Society, even massaging a tumor should be avoided. It says, massage of a tumor is followed by massively increased numbers of circulating tumor cells in the bloodstream. Experimental data further suggests that surgical trauma decreases natural host resistance to the formation of metastasis. Needle biopsy is occasionally useful, but a needle track may harbor nests of cells, which may form the basis for a later recurrent spread. Incisional biopsy of certain highly malignant tumors through an open operative field may be contraindicated because of risk by spread of the tumor throughout the operative field. Writing in the annals of the New York Academy of Sciences, Dr. Warren Cole spoke a truth that is well known within the medical profession but almost completely unknown to the public at large. Speaking of a series of surgical experiments, he wrote, quote, 10 of our patients underwent an unsuccessful attempt by a surgeon to remove the tumor. All surgeons know that this procedure is usually followed by an increased growth of the tumor. Although the most common factor related to spontaneous regression in our monograph was excision, that is, removal of the primary tumor, I cannot attach much importance to it because metastasis, that is called the spread of the cancer, develops so commonly after an excision of the primary tumor. Now, in view of the many problems and dangers inherent in cancer surgery, one may wonder why physicians recommend it at all. The expected answer, of course, is that statistically a patient stands a better chance for survival with surgery than without surgery, in spite of all of the risks that are attendant to it. The facts, however, are not that comforting. And there is a growing awareness even among many of the world's top surgeons that patients who submit to surgery have no greater life expectancy on the average than those who do not. So let's take a look at the record. I'm going to pause here and make a comment. I had an old buddy up in Northern California who came down with cancer here some years back. And his brother and his parents and all of his friends and wife and everybody said, oh my God, you've got to treat this. And Richard said, no, just leave it alone. So Richard did absolutely nothing with the cancer. He just lived his life until it finally killed him. The cancer finally killed him. But he lived for 6 years. After the diagnosis, he lived for 6 years. Now, he had the cancer for 2 or 3 years before he went to the doctor, when it got so bad, you know, that he couldn't ignore it anymore. So, in all, he had this cancer for 9 years. Normal people, I guess, would have, when they saw the lump, I guess they would have gone to the doctor and had it diagnosed, and it would have been cancer, and then he would have lived 9 years. But from the time it was discovered or diagnosed, he lived 6 years. Now, that's a year longer than the medical profession would tell you that if you didn't die for 5 years, they'd call it a cure. All right. Now, I told you about the lady across the road over here who died here last year. And her name was Kathy, and she had the cancer for about 2 years, maybe three. But it was at least 2 years. I mean, they worked on her diligently. I mean, she had a bone marrow transplant. That was one of the procedures. She had chemotherapy. She had all of her hair fall out. She just did everything that they told her to do, and then finally she died. She did not make it 5 years. The moral to the story is, from the cases that I've heard of, and I've heard of several, you know, not hundreds, but 3 or 4 or 5, where people have had cancer and did absolutely nothing, just left it alone, they lived longer than the 5-year cure rate. Now, over in Israel, they had a doctor's strike over there one time. And when the doctors went on strike, the cancer rate declined by about 25%. I mean, the death rate. Just the overall death rate declined by 25% when the doctors went on strike. What does that tell you? And you don't have to be a real brain, you know, to figure that out, that the doctors are killing that 25%. Because when the doctors went on strike, the death rate went down. Well, then they weren't doing anything of any great consequence for the 75% because they didn't die either. Now, we here in the Western world accept doctors like gods. I mean, these people, you know, have all the answers. Now, here's a doctor. He's saying, well, I looked at it and they don't have the answers. In fact, they tell you from experimentation, from documentation, that when you operate on cancer, your chances of living are no better than if you leave it alone. They're not one whit better. And in all probability, it's probably less than that, but it's certainly not better than that. So cancer and surgery do not go together like a horse and carriage. Now, the first statistical analysis of this question was compiled in 1844 by Dr. Leroy D'Atolis and published by the French Academy of Science. It is, to date, the most extensive study of its kind ever to be released. Over a period of 30 years, case histories of 2,781 patients were submitted by 174 physicians. The average survival after surgery was only 1 year and 5 months, not much different than the average is today. All right. The statistical average that they discovered back in 1844 is 1 year and 5 months, and it's the same today. So from the time you get your surgery, you can expect to live about a year and a half, round numbers. Dr. D'Atolis separated his statistics according to whether the patient submitted to surgery or caustics or refused such treatment. His findings were startling. The net value of surgery or caustics was in prolonging life 2 months for men and 6 months for women. But that was only in the first few years after the initial diagnosis. After that period, those who had not accepted any treatment had the greater survival potential by about 50%. So 50% of those who did absolutely nothing survived it, and 50% died from it. Now, that's my friend Richard. He did absolutely nothing, left it alone, and he lived for 6 years. Now, totally had this cancer for 9 years. Now, I say, you know, his survival rate was nearly double what they call the survival rate or the cure rate if you live for 5 years after you're diagnosed. Now, of course, 1844 was a long time ago. But recent surveys invariably have produced nearly the same results today that we had in 1844. For instance, it long has been accepted practice for patients with breast cancer to have not only the tumor removed, but the entire breast and lymph nodes as well. In more recent years, the procedure often includes subsequent removal of the ovaries. And in 1961, a large-scale controlled study was begun to see if all of the extra surgery was worthwhile. It was called the National Adjuvant Breast Project. After 7.5 years of statistical analysis, the results were conclusive. There was no significant difference in the percentage of patients remaining alive between those who had received the smaller operations and those who had received the larger. These findings were well publicized in medical literature in 1969. And yet even today, radical breast surgery continues to be performed in every hospital in America, fully approved by consensus medicine. Okay, now did you catch that? In 1969, they did a study. And in fact, it was a seven-year study. Several years they took the statistical, 7.5 years, statistical analysis. Between removing the tumor from your breast or cutting your breast clear off, ladies, and so when it was discovered that there was no difference between the two, this is 1969. Today, they're still cutting off your whole breast. Why? There's no statistical reason for it. Now, I'm not here to prevent breast removal. I mean, ladies, if you want your breast cut off, get after it. But there is a cure for cancer. In fact, there's 14 cures for cancer. Laetril is just one of them, and it would seem like to me that just common sense would say, well, Laetrile is better. Now, I haven't gotten to the proof of the Laetrile cancer cures yet. We're still talking about other subjects here. We'll come to that. But I just wanted you to know that the medical profession has done the statistical analysis, and they know that radical mastectomy does not increase your chances of survival, but they still do it anyway because it produces more revenue. Radical mastectomy costs more than a locally excised tumor. And furthermore, if you were to treat it with vitamin B17, it would cost you even less. Now, you know, I'm a businessman. I understand dollars and cents. I understand the logic behind what's going on here. I don't know if the average American does, but businessmen do. You know, a businessman is going to sell that product which makes him the most money. Where is the biggest profit? Would you rather sell this used car over here and make $500, or would you rather sell this new car over here and make $2,000? Well, you know, I'd rather sell the new car and make $2,000 than the used car and make $500. Now, cancer statistics can be very misleading, as we shall discuss shortly. Nevertheless, let us see what they tell us about survival possibilities after surgery. Two of the most common forms of cancer leading to surgery are of the breast and lung. According to current medical literature, only 16% of those undergoing breast surgery will experience a long-term survival. All right, now let's underline that. Ladies, when you have your breast removed, you will have a 16% long-term survival record. Now, 5 years, in my mind, is not long-term, but that's what they call it. So if you survive 5 years, that's long-term, and that's a success. 16% do. Now, how do you like that? That doesn't sound very good to me. 84% of you are going to die. Now, that doesn't sound very good. Now, I would concede that maybe from 1977 to today, maybe we're having better success rates. The overall success rate, last numbers I saw, is 37%. 37. Which means 63% of you die, 37% of you survive for 5 years, and then die. That doesn't sound very good to me. 5 years does not sound like long-term survival to me. But that's what they call it. Now, a patient, when we return to cancers which have metastasized to secondary locations within the body, the odds drop practically to zero, surgery or no surgery. And as Dr. John Stone summarized it in the pages of the California Medical Digest, he says, a patient who has clinically detectable metastasis, when first seen, has virtually a hopeless prognosis, as do patients who were apparently free of distant metastasis at that time, but who subsequently return with distant metastasis. That is spreading. That metastasis means spreading of the disease. And so when you come in, you got practically zero, and then after it moves around in your body, you got zero, zero. An objective appraisal, therefore, is that the statistical rate of long-term survival after surgery is on the average at best only 10 to 15%. And once the cancer has metastasized to a second location, surgery has almost no survival value whatsoever. The reason, of course, is that like the other therapies of orthodox medicine, surgery removes only the tumor. It does not remove the cause. And the first reported use of X-rays in the treatment of cancer was in 1899. The first radium brought to the United States was given to the New York Academy of Medicine in 1903. The development of machines such as cobalt and proton accelerators are comparatively recent, but the rationale behind them all is essentially the same as with surgery. The medical objective is to remove the tumor, but to do so by burning it away rather than cutting it out. And the average tumor is a mixture of cancer and non-cancer cells. And the grim fact of radiotherapy is that normal cells usually are more easily damaged by X-rays than cancer cells. The result is that the tumor reduces in size by giving up its non-cancer component. The portion that remains may be smaller, but its concentration of malignancy is greater. So Dr. John Richardson has explained the phenomenon this way. Radiation and or radiometric poisons will reduce palpable, gross, or measurable tumefaction. Often this reduction may amount to 75% or more of the mass of growth. This tumefaction over here, that's a doctor word for tumor. It may reduce the measurable tumor. Often this reduction may amount to 75% or more of the mass of growth. So it killed 75% of the tumor, which were the healthy cells, which weren't malignant, and the 25% that were malignant, now you've got one malignant tumor. That's what radiotherapy does. Well, isn't that just real special? And with that, let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law or an Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's eight and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967 and ask for it. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend will necessarily reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book called Laetrile. Laetrile Case Histories. Dr. Richardson is his name, John A. Richardson, M.D. I'm not sure that you can get this book just anywhere, so here's where you can get it if you can't find it locally. It's Brave New Bookstore in Austin, Texas. Brave New Bookstore. Their phone number is 512-480-2503. Once more, that's area code 512-480-2503. Now, this is where you can absolutely get it every time they carry it in stock. Brave New Bookstore is also on the internet, bravenewbookstore.com. All right, reviewing the book here, Laetrile Case Histories, The Hoax of the Proven Cancer Cure. The textbook of medical surgical nursing, a standard reference for registered nurses, is most emphatic on this point. It says, this is an area of public health concern because it may involve large numbers of people who may be exposed to low levels of radiation over a long period of time. The classic example is of the woman employed in the early 1920s to paint watch and clock dials with luminizing radium-containing paints. Years later, bone sarcomas resulted from the carcinogenic effect of the radium. Similarly, leukemia occurs more frequently in radiologists than other physicians. Another example is the Hiroshima survivors who have shown the effects of low levels of radiation. Among the most serious of the late consequences of irradiation damage is the increased susceptibility to malignant metaplasia and the development of cancer at sites of earlier irradiation. Evidence cited in support of this relationship refers to the increased incidence of carcinoma of skin, bone, and lung after latent periods of 20 years and longer following radiation or irradiation of those sites. Further support has been adduced from the relatively high incidence of carcinoma of the thyroid 7 years and longer following low dosage irradiation of the thymus in childhood and from the increased incidence of leukemia following total body irradiation at any age. In 1971, a research team at the University of Buffalo, under the direction of Dr. Robert W. Gibson, reported that fewer than a dozen routine medical x-rays to the same part of the body increased the risk of leukemia by at least 60%. Did you get that, boys and girls? Statistically. They just take people and they say, okay, we got to take some x-rays here. If they take 12 x-rays of the same location on your body, it will increase your chances of cancer by 60%. Other scientists have been increasingly concerned about the growing American infatuation with x-rays and have urged a stop to the madness, even calling for an end to the mobile chest x-ray units for the detection of TB. Dr. Erwin Bross, director of the biostatistics at the Roswell Park Memorial Institute of Cancer Research, has called for an immediate stop to the nationwide x-ray screening program for the detection of breast cancer. And he charged that the American Cancer Society and the National Cancer Institute had ignored the objections of scientists and had rammed through the program so that they could receive government grants totaling $54 million to carry out the screening. Dr. Bross warned that the program caused far more cancer than it detects, he said. All right, now we've heard this story before, so let me repeat it to you again so that you can follow it. You ladies are being encouraged to go in and have a breast x-ray or a mammography once a year. I've heard of some recommending it twice a year. That's once every 6 months. Now, statistically, if you do that, you are going to get cancer more readily than if you don't do it at all. Now, I don't know what the rate of breast cancer is here in the United States. It's several hundred thousand women a year die from it. I say 100,000. It may be that several hundred thousand have it. About 500,000 people a year die from cancer of all kinds. What the proportion of breast cancer is, I shouldn't say because I really don't know. But it's a bunch. And constantly they're telling you ladies that you need to go in and you need to have these breast x-rays. Now, clear back in the 1970s, when this book was first written, and it was updated and reissued in 2005, the mammographies or the breast examinations that are being carried out today cause more cancer than it detects. Now, if you want to go in and have it done, get after it. But you ought to be aware of the fact that you're more likely to give yourself cancer by doing that than you are to get cancer naturally. All right. Now, for each woman who is possibly cured by early detection, there are 4 or 5 new cancers produced by these x-rays. In my view, this entire matter has become so serious that the NCI, that's the National Cancer Institute, would be better off putting the money allotted for future screenings into a trust fund for the victims of the program who will develop cancer in 10 to 15 years by use of the program. It is important to bear in mind that these routine diagnostic x-rays are harmlessly mild when compared to the intense therapeutic radiation beamed into the bodies of cancer patients. Since x-rays cause cancer, they do not cure it. It is not surprising that x-ray therapy has a statistically high rate of failure. The National Adjuvant Breast Project, previously mentioned in connection with surgery, also conducted studies on the effects of irradiation, and here's a summary of their findings. Quote, from the data available, it would seem that the use of post-operative irradiation has provided no discernible advantage to patients so treated in terms of increasing the proportion who were free of disease for as long as 5 years. Again, they keep using the term 5 years. Kids, I tell you, if you're only going to live 5 more years, hell, leave it alone. You'll probably live 5 years or more if you do absolutely nothing. So this lady I told you about across the road, Kathy over here, let's suppose from the time she was diagnosed with cancer, she had done absolutely nothing. The longevity of those patients, I don't know what the average is. I don't know. But it's longer than if you have it radically removed, as is evidenced by the fact that this lady over here, she died in about 2 to 3 years, which is about average. And they did just about everything they could to her. Now, there are many adverse side effects of x-ray therapy. So, tuck that one away in your heart. When I get over here to... In the case of those concerned, or cancers rather, in the case of those cancers that are dividing more rapidly than normal cells, theoretically they will be killed before the patient is. In the case of a cancer that is dividing at the same rate or slower than normal cells, then there isn't even a theoretical chance of success. In any event, the poisoning of the system is the whole objective of these drugs, and the resulting pain and illness often is a torment worse than the disease itself. The toxins catch the blood cells in the process of dividing and cause blood poisoning. The gastrointestinal system is thrown into convulsion, causing violent nausea, diarrhea, loss of appetite, cramps, and progressive weakness. Hair cells are fast growing, so usually the hair falls out during treatment. Reproductive organs are affected, causing impotency or sterility. The brain becomes fatigued and racked with pain. Eyesight and hearing are impaired. In fact, every conceivable function is disrupted with such agony for the patient that many elect to die of the cancer rather than to continue with the treatment. Now, that's chemotherapy. Now, that's what they did to Kathy over here. Now, she continued with the treatment. And it was reported here locally that she was in great pain. She was suffering, but she was a brave soldier. And she was determined to beat this cancer. Well, she had a B17 vitamin deficiency is what was the problem. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you've got cancer, you've got a B17 vitamin deficiency. If you've got scurvy, you've got a vitamin C deficiency. That's all there is to that. And cutting out the tumor and treating it with chemicals or burning it out with radiation isn't going to give you any more B17. You are not suffering from an irradiation deficiency or a chemical deficiency. You're suffering from a vitamin B17 deficiency. That's what your problem is. Now, you can treat it with surgery if you want to, but you know, to treat scurvy with surgery doesn't make any sense. And I think if I suggest to you that, oh, you've got scurvy, why don't you go have your mouth cut out? You know, you'd look at me and you'd say, well, that's stupid because it's a vitamin deficiency. Well, what in the hell would you go have a cancer cut out for? Well, because that's the accepted modality. Well, hell, over in Africa, they got accepted modalities. Let's take George Washington, for instance. George Washington, our first president of the United States, he died from a loss of blood. He developed a cold. And the cold got a little bit worse, and so he went to the doctor. The doctor said, well, you've got pneumonia, so what we got to do is to bleed you. And so they cut him open, and they took out some blood. And I forgot how much it was. You know, they kept track of it, and they kept it in a bowl, and they took out so many ounces. And so he didn't get any better, and so they took out some more, and they took out some more, and took out some more. And one day, this goes on for 3, 4, 5 days, and one day, George Washington is holding his hand on his heart, and he looks over to his doctor, and he says, my heart has stopped. And he died. What did he die of? Loss of blood. The accepted modality of the medical quacks, and I'm going to use the word quack, is bleeding. Now, we discovered that bleeding doesn't cure disease, and today it's laughable. You got cancer. Let's take you and take out a quart of blood. Oh, you still have the cancer? Let's take out another quart of blood. At some point in time, you will die from a loss of blood, but it isn't going to do anything for the cancer one way or the other. Years ago, the doctors were going into wards with dirty hands. They'd go over here and they'd have an autopsy, and then they wouldn't wash their hands, and they'd go in and they'd do, you know, business with their other patients, and their other patients would develop diseases and die. And so a doctor over in Austria, a strange name, I can't pronounce his name, but he came to the conclusion that we were spreading disease through germs. So he came to the conclusion that you need to wash your hands after you come out of the autopsy room. And so he proposed that, and they threw him out of the medical profession. They did the same thing to him over washing your hands that the medical profession is doing to these doctors for using Lantrum. And so the truth of the matter is that the washing of hands was discovered by a medical doctor. And the use of Laetril was discovered by a medical doctor. All of these great finds in medicine are almost always found by medical doctors. So I'm not opposed to medical doctors. You know, the guy that wrote this book is a medical doctor. His name is Dr. John Richardson. He said, well, okay, cut, burn, and poison doesn't work, so let's try something else. But it interferes with the politically and economically motivation, or the political motivation and the economic motivation of the doctors and the institutions like the American Cancer Society. See, we learned our lesson with the polio. See, we used to have an organization called the March of Dimes. It took in millions of dollars a year. And as soon as they came up with a cure to polio, it shut down the organization. It destroyed one of those big medical revenue generators called polio. And so they came to the conclusion, they said, never again. Never again. So you're going to be looking for, you know, like Jerry's Kids every year, you know, muscular dystrophy. And here's Jerry, he's on the Labor Day telethon. Jerry Lewis is going to die raising money for muscular dystrophy. And then somebody else will take it over, and he'll die looking for a cure. There is a cure, but it's in vitamins and minerals. It doesn't have anything to do with looking for a cure. What we really want, what they're looking for, what they're trying to find, is a coal tar derivative cure. They're looking for something on the order of aspirin that we can synthetically manufacture out of coal tar. And if we can find that, we might use it. And other than that, we're not going to use anything else. All right, so now, I'm not going to read all of this to you. You know, you can, you know, you're big boys and girls, you can buy the book and you can read it for yourself. But the moral to the story here is that the medical profession says that cut, burn, and poison works. And they're not lying to you. Well, they're not telling you the whole truth, but they're not totally lying to you. Cut, burn, and poison are three forms of the 14 cures to cancer. Some of the cures to cancer are better than others. There are some that are easier, faster, cheaper, give you a better result than others. Cut, burn, and poison are the poorest three of the 14. But when somebody is operated on and he lives for 5 years, the accepted definition of cancer cure in the United States is, if we cut it out and you don't die within 5 years, it's cured. If you die in 5 years and 1 month, then you died from something other than the cancer that caused this problem because it was a cancer cure. Now, that's our definition. I think it sucks. I think it's stupid, but then, you know, I don't make these definitions. I'm a reporter. Cancer cure is 5-year survival rate. And there are people that they irradiate, that they cut on, and that they give chemotherapy. Like Lance Armstrong is a classic example. Now, here's a guy who's a bicycle rider, and he won the Tour de France, I think, 5 or 6 times. And he got cancer. Young man, he got cancer, and he went through the conventional route, and he survived it. And he survived it for longer than 5 years. And he is held up as a classic textbook example of a cancer cure. And using that definition, then he's absolutely cured of cancer. And if you accept that definition, he lasted longer than 5 years. That's a cancer cure. That's one of 14 modalities. This Laetrile works a little better. You don't get the nausea. It doesn't cost as much money. And on that goes. Now, I wanted to point out here that, I'm going to back up over here. Where, remember we talked about, first of all, you're going to die. And then there was the self-evident absurdities. Self-evident absurdities. And I wanted to cover a couple of those. Listen to this. But let us return to the subject of cassava. Remember this cassava, C-A-S-S-A-V-A. It's some kind of a plant. It's some kind of a fruit. Some kind of a thing that you eat. But let us return to the subject of cassava. And at the Sisarua Health Resort in Bogor, Indonesia, 175 cancer patients were given a high-concentration cassava diet specifically to observe what effects, if any, that it would have on their disease. Keep in mind now, this cassava has the highest concentration of Laetrile, this vitamin B17, of any other plant that we know of. There's a lot of good sources for B17. This cassava is number one. Now, a few patients did experience a slight dizziness and nausea, but these were easily counterattacked by standard symptomatic treatment. Dr. Simond Juntak, who helped to conduct the experiment, wrote, quote, up until now, the plus or minus 6,000 patients who already have been treated with SPP cassava, the tuber, 175 of whom were being treated for cancer. None have ever shown any sign of dangerous intoxication from the ingestion of B17. Detected were only faint spells of dizziness, which easily were neutralized by drinking a glass of sweet tea. The important part of this study, however, was not the lack of toxicity. It was the effect on the patient's disease. After detailing the administrative and clinical procedures used, Dr. Simond Juntak, this is spelled S-I-M-A-N-D-J-U-N-T-A-K, so if I'm having trouble pronouncing it, you'll understand why. He summarized his findings this way. He said, after administration of SPP cassava to the patients, clinical progress can be observed. For example, improved eating and sleeping, reduced feelings of pain, feelings of being more fit, increased body weight, and the tumor mass becoming weaker, smaller, and in some cases, a total disappearance of the tumor mass was detected. From the 175 carcinoma patients, clinical progress after the administration of treatment with SPP cassava have been detected in 67 cases, or plus or minus 38%. So 38% of these people had improvement. Now remember that this is not a therapy using B17, not massive doses. They're just eating the cassava fruit. So all they're doing is just eating peach pits. Now, when you, if you have cancer, I don't want to oversimplify this and say, well, just eat apricot pits and it'll solve your problem. If your body is so badly out of balance that you have cancer, you also have to have enzymes to go with this B17. There's a regimen that goes along with this, so I don't want to oversimplify this and tell you that, you know, all you got to do is eat peach pits and it'll solve your problem and your cancer will go away, because I don't know that that's true. But if you have cancer, there are people around, you know, that are doing this under the table, or you can leave the country. I mean, you can go to Switzerland, you can go to Mexico, you can go to Indonesia, you can go anywhere in the world and get Laetrile treatment, except the United States and probably Canada, Australia, or Western Europe, or some countries in Western Europe. The patient suffering from malignant breast tumor who came to the health resort in Bogor, for treatment, have mostly received surgery and radiation already. The best progress through treatment with SPP cassava was detected on patients who previously had not received any medical intervention. I might point this out, that once you go through chemotherapy, it impairs your immune system, and the use of B17 depends upon your immune system working in your body to destroy the tumor. See, once you've destroyed your immune system, you can just about put your head between your knees and kiss her goodbye. Which is the reason why you should use alternative therapies before you go to radical. But you know, most people, they want to do radical, and then when the doctor says, okay, we've done everything we can, there's no hope, then they will go to one of these alternative therapy clinics, and like as not, they'll save your life. You know, they do that many, many times, but you know, the rate of success is not nearly as good as if you have not destroyed your immune system with cut, burn, and poison first. You see, your lymph nodes, they cut your breast off, ladies, they cut out your lymph. Well, your lymph system over here is a part of your immune system. You need that lymph system over here to dispose of the cancer tissue. So when you got a lump under your arm or in your breast, that's natural and normal. It's your lymph system that's plugged up. What you need to do is unplug it. These are called self-evident absurdities. Now, next time we'll take a look at the summary of observations contained in the report of September 1st, 1976. And then we'll take a look at some of the places around the world where you can get cancer treatment by way of Laetrile, vitamin B17. And they're numerous, and their success rate is just as good as it has been here in the United States. And it's much, much better than it is with conventional. Now, when you get cancer, that's not good. That's not good. That does not mean that Laetrile is going to save every single cancer patient that walks in the door. No, that isn't going to happen. But it's going to save a hell of a lot more of them than will cut, burn, and poison, which are the three poorest ways to cure cancer. Not that they don't do the job. They will do the job. So if you want to go the conventional route, that's a choice that you have to make in life. And like all things in life, sometimes that choice is a good one. Sometimes it's a bad one. If you die, it was a bad one. If you live, it was a good one. Lance Armstrong is sitting there saying, smartest thing I ever did was when I went and had chemotherapy. Well, it worked. And he's still alive. But 63% of the time, it fails. And for the 63% that die, then it was the wrong decision to make. They should have done something else. They might not have known what else to do, but they should have done something else. All right, so we'll take it up right there next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We'll take a look at Laetrile case histories in the self-evident absurdities. Meanwhile, back on the farm, you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.